There is a reason that you tell your kids not to accept candy from strangers. You know, innocence can overshadow pure evil, thus proving that one should be aware of wolves in sheep's clothing. It goes without saying that this case is one of the biggest in the history of serial murderers. To date, investigators are still uncovering leads regarding potential victims. Dean Arnold Coral was an American serial killer who was known as the Candyman, who together with two youthful accomplices named David Brooks and Elmer Wayne Henley, abducted, tortured, and murdered a minimum of 28 boys in a series of killings spanning from 1970 to 1973 in and around Houston, Texas. The crimes, which became known as the Houston Mass Murders, came to light only after Henley shot and killed Coral. At the time, the Houston Mass Murders were considered the worst example of serial murder in American history. And this is the incredible story of the Candyman.
Recorded in Rocket City, USA. No bullshit. Just real talk. And now Deuce Conrad.
Dean Arnold Coral was born in Waynesdale, Indiana on Christmas Day 1939 to over-affectionate mother Mary and Arnold, a father who did not like children. Now, as you can imagine, family life at the beginning was not a happy one for Dean and his brother Stanley, considering that their parents constantly argued. Arnold Coral was a strict disciplinarian and the boys were always being punished, so it seemed. Arnold and Mary eventually divorced in 1946, and soon after Arnold joined the Army. Mary found life without Arnold sad, and so she bought a horse trailer and moved to Tennessee to be closer to the base where Arnold was posted. Dean and Stanley were left with an elderly couple most of the time while Mary went looking for work. Now, the arguments between the Corals continued, and again, they separated. The two boys were at different poles on the personality scale. You see, Stanley was friendly and outgoing, always playing with other children from the neighborhood or school. But Dean, on the other hand, was always a loner, preferring to stay inside and away from the other children. Now, by 1950, Mary and Arnold tried again to reconcile, but it didn't work. So they eventually gave up on the relationship, and in 1950, Mary, with the two boys, left Tennessee for Houston. Now, it was also around that same time that Dean was diagnosed with a congenital heart ailment after a bout of rheumatic fever, and he was told that he should avoid sports wherever possible. But Dean, not being a sporting type, actually found this to be good news. In 1953, Mary remarried. Her new husband was a traveling clock salesman by the name of Jake West. Now, soon after the marriage, the couple had a daughter, and with both his parents working, Dean was extremely protective of his younger siblings, always watching out for them and trying to keep them out of trouble. Dean found himself a hobby in scuba diving, but had to give it up after fainting one day while diving. That would be a symptom of his heart defect. At school, he enjoyed music and was a keen trombone player. In fact, teachers remembered him as a quiet yet polite student. After a suggestion from a candy salesman, Mary set herself up with a little candy shop to help support the family. Dean was a runner for the candy shop, which had its humble beginnings in the garage of the family home. Dean often found himself exhausted for running orders to people in town, but he never complained. After high school graduation, Dean Coral moved back to Indiana to help look after his stepfather Jake's elderly mother, while the rest of the family remained in Houston. When Dean moved back to the family home, he decided to get a job with a Houston Lighting and Power Company during the day, and that way he could still help make candy at night with the rest of the family. His drive to succeed impressed many of the town's young women, but Dean failed to notice. Following the breakdown of his mother's second marriage in 1963, she appointed him vice president of the company, and he moved into an apartment above the shop. Now, the candy company by now had a small number of staff, and Coral often spent a lot of his free time in the company of young boys. He often gave free candy to local children, and for this reason, he was given the nickname the Candy Man. And it was given to him by the media when his crimes were eventually uncovered. In 1964, Dean, like many other young men, was drafted into the United States Army. Life in the Army caused a change in the young man. Dean found himself desiring after fellow officers he shared his quarters with. Dean finally realized he was gay. And, you know, until then, Dean had known something about his life was wrong, but until his realization about his homosexuality, he had been unsure about what had been missing. He would eventually be given a discharge so that he could return home to help his mother run the candy shop. Now, returning home after an 11-month assignment in the Army, Dean found his parents arguing and fighting once again. The West had begun to argue over their business. Jake saw Mary as a rival, and he soon threw her out. Mary would take the children and began running her own lolly shop. Dean found himself an apartment near his mother and soon started hanging out with teenage boys from the neighborhood. It was easy to get them to come to his apartment. Dean always had piles of candy around, and most of the kids couldn't resist. Dean still worked as much as he could for his mother in the candy shop, and one day, one of the other male workers made a pass at Dean. He had his mother sack the boy, firing. Now, Dean's reaction to the solicitation was one of mortal horror. Yet at the same time, other boys would not want to be in the same room alone with Dean. You see, this confused others about his sexual nature. Again, Dean's mother decided to marry. This time her husband was a seaman. And soon Mary found flaws in his character. She found him to be dull company and quite stupid. And the marriage, would survive two divorces until finally, on the advice of a psychic, Mary left the marriage in Houston and went to Dallas. Dean eventually took over the business and invited local children to the store for free candy. A number of local people commented that it was not normal for Coral, and because he always seemed to hang around with youngsters, in particular teenage boys. However, no one made that connection with the rash of missing use. Following the failure of her third marriage in 1968, Coral's mother moved to Colorado. And although they often talked on the telephone, she was never to see her son again. The candy shop began to fail, and like his father, Dean took a job as an electrician at the Houston Lighting and Power Company. He worked there until the day he was killed by Wayne Henley. Now, Coral decided to stay in Houston. He liked it there and finally found the freedom away from his protective mother to do as he pleased. Dean's first attraction to the younger boys was one of an older protective brother. Now, at first, he would never say anything or do anything overly sexual. He just preferred the company of the teen boys who hung around Coral's apartment. But lurking beneath the kind exterior was a sexual maniac waiting to surface, and it was just a matter of time. Now, one day in 1969, Dean had learned that some of the boys would allow oral sex in exchange for money. And this is how Coral first met 14-year-old David Brooks. Brooks enjoyed the older man's company and looked up to him as a big brother, someone to ask for guidance and for help through the tough and tumultuous teenage years. And soon David became completely emotionally dependent on Dean and spent most of his time with him rather than at home. Brooks actually moved in with Coral for a while. Dean still worked at the lighting company and soon hired a storage shed to keep his few possessions in that were not needed in his tiny apartment. But on Christmas Day 1969, the day that Dean Coral turned 30, it was a turning point in his life. He became depressed and he lost his thrill for life and became further introverted. But David Brooks was often around and he tried to cheer Coral up. Often it would end with Coral paying Brooks $5 for oral sex.
Do you have a beard? It's a legitimate question. You know, a beard says a lot about a man. A beard can define a man just by looking at him. Screw what they say. You can judge a book by its cover, and a beard is one hell of a cover. But let me ask you this, how do you take care of your beard? Are you putting chemicals into your face that will basically eat the hide off of a zombie? Stop that shit. Be a badass and start using badass beard care. Look, it's all natural. It's made by badass vets. And it will make your beard so incredibly soft, so incredibly manly. And you can get a free trial set today by going to deuceconrad.com and selecting On Promotions.
Just 1 year later, and by Christmas of 1970, Dean Coral was a murderer. University of Texas student Jeffrey Conan left the campus and began to hitchhike home to Houston. 21-year-old Jeffrey was last seen on September 25, 1970, trying to get another Lyft, but instead he was picked up by Dean Coral, who took him to his apartment at 3300 Yorktown. And there the young man was bound by his hands and feet and gagged. Dean Coral sodomized the student before murdering him and dumping his body. Being such a wayward area for down-and-out teens, Coral had his pick of victims. He found that a lot of them were willing to come over for a party. The parties usually included glue and paint sniffing, pot smoking, and pill popping. Some of the boys would allow Coral to perform oral sex on them for $5. Many of the boys Coral chose were usually in trouble or runaways. And when they went missing, no one really noticed at first. However, Coral was not happy with only oral sex. You see, he wanted penetration. He wanted to perform sodomy on his victims. And when they refused it, it was then that they found themselves dead. He killed them because he wanted sex, and they didn't want to, Brooks told police later. Brooks would later tell a fantastical story to police about the various victims who would live or die at Coral's whim. One case, when Brooks arrived at Coral's place one day unannounced in 1970, Dean was wandering around the house naked, and when he saw Brooks, he was furious, demanding to know why he had arrived without telling him. Brooks thought this was unusual until he saw in Coral's bedroom two younger boys strapped to homemade torture rack. Brooks left the apartment confused and dejected. Coral later tried to make it up to his friend by giving him a new Corvette. Now, no doubt it was to buy Brooks' silence about what he had seen. Coral told Brooks that he had killed both of the teens and dumped their bodies, but the Corvette was another part of Coral's plan. He saw it as an opportunity to have Brooks with him while they went driving around looking for victims. One potential victim, who went on to become a police officer, said, "I was one of the boys that Coral and Brooks tried to abduct. I felt something was wrong and told them to get lost." Yet others were not so intuitive. One unnamed victim accepted the offer of pot smoking back at Coral's apartment. And when the trio arrived at the unit, Coral tied the boy to his torture rack in his bedroom and sodomized the boy. Coral then strangled the boy, and all the while, Brooks watched. Now, no doubt Brooks would have then helped Coral to get rid of the body near Lake Sam Rayburn. But it was just before Coral's 31st birthday that he decided to have another party on December the 15th, 1970, at his apartment on Columbia Street in Houston. The guests were Brooks, 15-year-old Danny Yates, and 14-year-old James Glass. The two boys were friends from a church social group. Now, Glass had also been to Coral's apartment previously and found Dean to be a happy and pleasant man to be around. However, this time he would not find Coral so obliging. In fact, both boys were quickly tied to Coral's bed, a torture rack, and sodomized. Danny and James were then strangled, and this time Coral decided not to dump the bodies but to hide them at the boat shed he hired on Silverbell Street. On January 27, 1971, Dean Coral decided he needed another double murder to satiate his appetite. He had another new apartment, this time at 3200 Mangrum Road, or excuse me, Magnum Road. Now, he wanted to christen it with murder. So out for a drive, Brooks and Coral enticed two brothers back to the apartment. 13-year-old Jerry and 14-year-old Donald Waldrop were to never be seen alive again. Once they were inside Coral's apartment, they were raped and strangled before joining Danny Yates and James Glass's body at the Silver Bell Street boat shed. Brooks blatantly admits to being there when the bodies were buried. "I believe I was present," he said, "when they were buried." Now, there was another short gap between killings. This time, Coral waited 4 months before murdering two more boys. This time, on May 29, 1971, the victims chosen were 13-year-old David Hilgeist and 16-year-old George Winkle. The boys had been on his way to the had been on their way to the local swimming pool when they accepted a lift from Coral. They were last seen climbing into Dean Coral's white van. Now, later that evening, George called his mother to say he had gone to Freeport with some friends and that they would be back home soon, but he would never be seen alive again. While at Dean Coral's apartment, the two boys were once again tied to the bed before being sodomized, tortured, and strangled. They, too, were then buried with the others at the boat shed. George and David's parents were worried when the boys did not return, and in fact, they had posters made up and handed them out or stuck them to poles, hoping someone may have seen the two teens. A psychic was even brought in to see if he could help in the search, but he only had bad news for the parents. The psychic told them that their sons were dead. One of David's best friends tried to comfort the family. Elmer Wayne Henley told the Hallgeist that he was sure that David had just run away and would return soon. It was not long before another boy disappeared, 17-year-old Reuben Watson, who was last seen on his way to the cinema on August 17, 1971. Now, he was picked up along his route by Brooks and Coral before being taken back to Coral's apartment, where he was brutalized for hours until Dean Coral grew bored of his victim and killed him.
At Robin Hood, we think investing is better with friends. So for everyone you invite to join, you'll both earn a reward of stock. As soon as your friend signs up and links their bank account, we'll credit each of your accounts with a reward stock. Now keep in mind, you can receive up to $500 in reward stocks each calendar year. So feel free to spread the word. Go to www.deuceconradshow.com and select the promotions link, and from there you can sign up directly with Robinhood today.
Now, the next victim that Brooks brought to the house for Coral was Henley. Even though Brooks was so emotionally dependent on Coral, he also refused Coral's offers for anal sex. But on one occasion, he found himself a victim of Coral's, though he had lived to tell the story. Now, the first time Coral had ever met Elmer Wayne Henley was through Brooks when he arranged a test for the new young man. You see, Henley was made to knock Brooks unconscious, which he did without hesitating. When Brooks awoke, he found himself tied to Coral's bed and was bleeding from his anus. He had been sodomized by Coral while he was unconscious, yet Brooks did not tell anyone about the incident until after Dean Coral's death. He also remained true and loyal to his friend. However, now there was another person in the equation, you see. Brooks felt a little indisposed by Henley. It appears that Coral was beginning to fall in love with a younger man, and Coral liked Henley's independence. You see, he was tiring of Brooks' complete emotional reliance. Also, Henley could be bought. He was willing to do almost anything for money, including selling his friends to Coral as sex slaves. And though Henley would later deny it, it was rumored that he was paid $200 per male he brought to Coral. Coral would try and rationalize his behavior to Brooks and Henley, telling them that the boys were no loss to society and that most of them were delinquents and a burden. You see, they were no great loss, he said. Another victim was found on February 24, 1972. Frank Aguirre was a little older than most of Coral's victims, being 19 when he disappeared. And in fact, he had a girlfriend at the time, 14-year-old Rhonda Williams. She would later be a witness to Coral's eventual murder. On May 21, 1972, Dean and his cohorts grab another two victims, this time 16-year-old Johnny DeLome and 17-year-old Billy Bosch, who were taken to the apartment where they were tortured and raped for hours. Johnny was shot dead by Henley. Henley later claimed that he had fired the gun up the teen's nostrils. The two boys were then taken to Coral's original dumping ground of High Island and buried. Now, a few months later, on October the 3rd, 1972, Coral again chooses a double murder. This time the victims were 13-year-old Richard Hembry and 14-year-old Wally Simoneau. Now again, the teens were taken back to Coral's apartment on the premises of a party. Once there, the boys were given paint to sniff and other substances to which rendered them unconscious. And once they passed out, Coral takes the boys to the room where they're strapped to his torture rack, and there those victims again were repeatedly anally raped. And according to Brooks, some are kept alive for days of torture. Once Dean Coral is done with his victims, they're strangled and dumped. Now, Wally and Richard were buried at the boat shed with many of the other victims. But during November 1972, Coral's victim, Billy Bosch's younger brother, 15-year-old Michael, becomes another victim. The helpless boys were subjected to such torture as having their pubic hairs pulled out one by one, having objects inserted into their anus, and having glass rods shoved up their penis. On June 11, 1973, 15-year-old Billy Lawrence is brought to Dean Coral's apartment for a party. The boy does not leave alive. He was brutally raped and murdered by Dean Coral. 15-year-old Homer Garcia joins the list of sexually tortured and murdered victims of Dean's on July the 7th, 1973. And then on July 27th, less than 3 weeks after the last murder, 17-year-old Charles Cobble and 18-year-old Marty Jones were murdered after being tortured by Dean Coral. These boys, they were always procured in the same way. Brooks or Henley would lure the boys to Dean's house with the promise of an alcohol party. And the victims would then be allowed to drink themselves unconscious, only for Dean Coral to eventually tie them up, molest them, and kill them. You see, there were many more victims. 13-year-old James Dramela had disappeared during the first week of August of 1973. Another 9-year-old boy had disappeared only weeks before. The killings were getting more frequent and more brutal. But the end was near.
Are you looking for unbiased news in a world of biased media? Look no further. 1440 provides an impartial view of what's happening in the world so our readers can form their own conclusions. 1440 scours hundreds of sources each and every day to bring you a single morning briefing thoughtfully curated by experts, straight to your email with no haggling or unnecessary spam. Get even more benefits by signing up through the Deuce Conrad Show affiliate link. visit www.deuceconradshow.com and select promotions to sign up today.
On the afternoon of August 8, 1973, Henley had arrived at Coral's apartment at 2020 Lamar Street with two victims. He had brought 16-year-old Timothy Curley for Coral and Rhonda Williams, the girlfriend of one of Curl's previous victims. Rhonda had decided to run away and confided in Henley. Now, Henley asked her to come with him to the party at Dean Coral's. Henley had thought it would be okay, but it wasn't. And when Coral saw that Henley had brought a girl with him, he went into an absolute rage. After sniffing glue for quite some time, Henley, Timothy, and Rhonda all passed out. Coral saw this as his opportunity to teach Henley a lesson for bringing a girl. Coral tied all three of them up, but when Henley awoke, he saw his predicament and he begged Coral to let him live. He pleaded to Coral, saying he would rape and kill Rhonda, while Coral did the same to Timothy. Now, Coral took Timothy to the bedroom and stripped him of his clothes. He gagged him and he tied him to the torture board. Coral then demanded that Henley do the same to Rhonda. And so after being untied, Henley grabbed Rhonda as Coral looked on, but Henley was unable to get an erection. Coral found this funny and began calling Henley names. Henley was at his breaking point. He then picked up a .22 caliber pistol and he aimed it at Dean Coral. Coral egged on the young man, daring him to shoot him. He mocked him with the statement, "Go on, Wayne, kill me, why don't you?" As Coral came towards Henley, he fired 6 bullets into Coral's chest, killing him instantly. Then 18-year-old Henley called police to tell them that he had murdered Dean Coral. Henley told police it was in self-defense. However, when the police arrived to find the three teenagers on the front steps and the dead body inside, they were not to know the amazing story Henley had to tell them. Henley went on to tell police that Coral's house contained a torture room in which the furniture consisted of a wooden board with handcuffs fitted at each top corner and rope knots at each bottom corner. Henley continued his monotone story of Coral's parties where he would give the teens drugs or glue to sniff, usually rendering them unconscious before tying them up and sodomizing them on his torture board before killing them. To prove his tale was true, the police asked for the names of the victims. The first three that Henley was able to recall were three that police had on their missing persons list. Then Henley told the officers where they would probably find the victims. And in fact, he took them to Silverbell Street boat shed rented by Dean Coral in Houston. Once they located the boat shed, police began to dig, and in no time they uncovered lime and the telltale smell of decay. The first body was found, and it was the naked body of the 13-year-old boy found in a plastic bag. It was now time for them to bring in crime scene investigators, and each body was brought out, Henley cried more. And in fact, he said at one point, "It was all my fault." When asked why, he replied, he said, "Because I introduced him to them boys." Henley then went on to tell police how Dean would ask him to bring boys around for parties. And when police finished searching, they found the bodies of 17 boys under the floor of the boat shed and 10 others found in various other sites. David Brooks watched news reports as the body count grew, and he decided it was time to talk to the police. When he arrived at the police station, the officers interviewing Henley told him that Brooks had just turned up. Henley looked relieved and said, "That's good. Now I can tell you the whole story." Then Henley admitted to doing some of the murdering himself. Brooks told police about his involvement and how it was far less, but that Henley had taken over when he was introduced to Coral, and Coral realized that he had more friends than Brooks and would be a better ally than victim. Most of the killings that occurred after Wayne came into the picture involved all three of us. Wayne seemed to enjoy causing pain, said Brooks. Now, Brooks was tried and sentenced for life for his involvement in at least six murders. Henley was tried for murder in July of 1974, and he was found guilty of the murders and sentenced to six 99-year terms of imprisonment. His killing of Dean Corll was judged to be a justifiable homicide. Now, in December of 1978, Henley's conviction was overturned on the grounds that the trial had suffered from pretrial publicity. But Henley would be convicted a second time in June of 1979.
Since 1999, Rakuten has paid its members over $2 billion in cash back. Formerly known as Ebates, Rakuten is an affiliate reseller of over 2,500 online retailers. Rakuten passes part of their commission on their sales back to you in the form of a cash back payment. You see, you earn cash back by using the Rakuten online shopping portal. And using Rakuten is very simple and easy. There are no fees or forms you need to fill out to get your money. But to get the cash back, all you have to do is start any online shopping you do at the Rakuten website. You'll click through their site to your preferred online store, such as Target, Walmart, Sephora, Macy's, Nike, and many more. And then simply make your purchase as usual. Easy, right? Well, I'm going to make it even better for you being a listener of the Deuce Conrad Show. As a first-time shopper, you will get up to $30 to use on your first purchase. Of course, certain terms and conditions apply. Visit www.deuceconradshow.com and select promotions to get started today.
Victims and countless loved ones left grieving. A dedicated anthropologist who spent years bringing the victims home and is still searching for answers for the final unidentified victim. And the big question nearly 50 years later, are there more bodies out there? A new search for possible victims is underway, and it has the blessing of the only victim's parents who are still alive. I think if there's a chance of overturning a stone to find more answers for people that are missing their child or children, use it. Definitely, said James Dramela, the father of 13-year-old Stanton, who was the last victim and the first whose remains were found. Convicted killer Elmer Wayne Henley directed Texas Equisearch in 2021 to the Pasadena home of Dean Corll, otherwise known as the Candyman and the Pied Piper. He was one of his accomplices who shot him to death. Now, Texas Equisearch mounted search and recovery team started in August of 2000 with the purpose to provide volunteer horse mounted search and recovery for lost and missing persons. With approximately 1,000 members, Texas Equisearch is available to conduct searches nation and worldwide. They are a 501c3 nonprofit organization which is funded solely by donations. Some of those who live around what was once the home of Dean Corll know about the horrible things that happened there, whereas others don't. It's crazy and it's weird and it's scary, said Maria Silas, who lives near the home on Lamar Street in Pasadena. Teenage boys, mostly runaways, would be lured to Corll's home by Elmer Wayne Henley and David Brooks. Corll would sexually torture them and kill them. I have 11 kids and I would not know what to do. I would go crazy if one of my kids walked home from school and doesn't make it home, said Silas. You see, back in 1973, Henley shot and killed Dean Corll and told police where 27 bodies were buried. I actually wrote a letter to Wayne Henley, not anticipating I'd hear back from him, but I did, said Texas Equisearch founder Tim Miller. Miller says that he's been talking to Henley a couple of times a week on the phone. Henley directed searchers to Corll's Pasadena home. He said, knowing Dean as well as I knew him, I think that's a place you need to do, Miller said. the backyard search turned up only animal bones, and it's now over. But it's still a win-win for everybody, said Miller. We know nothing is here, and the neighborhood can relax. And even though nothing was found, Henley is telling Tim Miller that there are more victims that need to be recovered. If he wouldn't have killed Dean Coral in his house where he killed him, there would be so many more victims out there, Miller said. The other accomplice, David Brooks, died in prison back in 2020. Henley comes up for parole every few years, but it's guaranteed that's not going to happen. I honestly think that he's going to try to help us as much as he can, said Miller. Is there more to this story? Were there more victims? Possibly. But will we ever really know the truth? Probably not. Until next time, I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Deuce Conrad Show on Spotify Podcast. In case you didn't know, you can also hear this podcast on Google Podcast and Apple Podcast and most podcast platforms across the web. For more information about tonight's show, you can also visit www.deuceconradshow.com. Visit show notes for more details.